airline transfer bonuses and devaluations, plus a collection of ways to replenish your points and miles balances without actually flying on today's Mileonomics Squared podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon. And I'm Robert Dwyer. And this is the Mileonomics Squared podcast, no annual fee edition. If you're not subscribed to the full Mileonomics Squared podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into topics like the following. News item number one. This is hot off the presses, just coming in today. Etihad awards are now bookable on AA.com.
Big news. Really big news. I mean, the New Zealand call center is just probably in shambles with this news, right?
Well, I think the New Zealand call center might still be necessary. Oh, I did a test as soon as I heard this, and I said, let me go see how easy it is to book things now. I mean, you said before that you're an expert on a booking for a week, and boy, that's turning out to be true on two of the major bookings I've done in the past couple of months. And I did a search from JFK to Abu Dhabi, and I did that search on Juicy Miles, and I also did the search on AA.com. And I also performed the search on Etihad's site using the complicated round trip trick. That is, to me, the most reliable indicator of whether there's going to be space there. The results are AA did not show the space, Juicy Miles did show the space, and Etihad Guest with the round trip booking of that did also show the space. So I linked to a post from One Mile at a Time here because it seems like everybody was talking about this almost as if it was an embargoed piece of information. But Ben/Lucky over at One Mile at a Time pointed out that you do still need to seem to call the a different call center. He said to call Australia. In my experience, calling Australia has not worked, but he knows more about award bookings than I know. So you do need to, I think, call a place if you want to book that elusive JFK to Abu Dhabi. And the really compelling thing there is the apartments and all that. But hey, long story short, it's nice to be able to book these directly. Most would say, some would say, well, there goes your ability to redeem AA miles because everybody can do it now because it comes right up when you search on AA.com. So what do you think? Is it a good thing or a bad thing when foreign partners become bookable directly through the portals? Or is that the one saving grace that you have that opens up availability, your ability to know the tricks that you need to do when you need a call to book something?
Yeah, I'll say it's actually, I'll go good news on it. Anything that allows people to use their miles, I'm for. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I think so. Right. I mean, the ability to book online with the big three carriers on our side, I think is really good. And, you know, there's always tricks. There's always, you know, jumping on things as soon as they become available plenty of other tricks. So this business about having to call New Zealand is, you know, that was one crazy thing. And I don't think any. I prefer to have it just be up front. And I just disappoints me that it's such a, you know, I think I saw a post on the points guy today pop up and it was something like, you know, I was able to book a business class by waiting or something like that. And it's like, geez, when do we start celebrating the ability to redeem your miles for the thing that you're supposed to be able to redeem them for as if you just won the lottery? I mean, it's getting really bleak when that's the case.
All right, well, let's move on to this next one here. British Airways on Monday announced a devaluation but didn't give us any details. This is kind of odd. They told us we're going to have a change to our cost for flights on partners starting May 30th of this year, but we don't want to give you the details right now. So Seat 31B, actually a great little blog, did some legwork, put together what he thinks is the new chart, and we'll link to it below here. I think it's better than just going over it. There's some winners, there's some losers, and there are some upsides. We talk more about this on the full version of the podcast. So if you're interested in a little deeper dive,
yeah, it goes into effect May 30th. I look forward to seeing maybe some better things there than were before, but I agree. Overall, it's just about the same as it was before. American Express has a 30% transfer bonus to Virgin Atlantic. Virgin Atlantic miles are good for awards on Delta Metal and famously on ANA round trip in first class. They have really good rates if you can find that partner award availability. They're also good for trips to the famous Necker Island at 1.2, maybe going up to 1.4 million miles. So that seems like a lot of points and miles, but you know, hey, if you've got membership rewards and you know, this 30% bonus comes around and maybe you have some existing Virgin Atlantic points, you could get to that elusive goal. So check it out if you're in the market for those awards or for Necker Island.
Yeah. Next up, we've got a Staples Visa gift card sale, and this comes around every once in a while. It's coming around starting on Sunday. So it runs May 5th through the 9th. It's fee-free Visa gift cards. It's said to be limited.
I don't like Visa gift cards. I have a personal personal preference for MasterCard gift cards.
I also but
that
do
is
now. Yeah.
Good to know for some people.
Yeah.
We talk more about in the free show or the paid show why that is that we like MasterCard gift cards lately, especially the ones from Staples. But next news item right next to Staples in my neighborhood is Stop and Shop. And Stop and Shop is back off of strike and ready to serve up MasterCard gift card deals. And this week they have a deal on $15 off groceries when you buy $100 worth of certain third-party gift cards. Now, we sent a Milanomics staffer over there to perform a purchase. Well, actually, that staffer was me. I performed a purchase there of a $100 third-party gift card, and it is indeed limited to the retailers that they say. Most prominently, with the highest resale value being a Best Buy gift card, a $100 Best Buy gift card. Didn't experiment with a $100 Amazon gift card because Amazon gift cards are worth more than Best Buy gift cards in the resale market. And that did not trigger the $15 voucher.
Oh, wow.
So the $15 voucher is valid towards a future grocery purchase. And it can be redeemed at self-checkout. I would just say that one weird trick you need to do is it'll say that the voucher ran up for $0, but you need to stuff the voucher or some piece of paper into the little slot to actually trigger the $15 discount. But anyways,
you're talking about the slot, like the coupon slot?
Yes. It says when you scan it that it's worth nothing. And then you're like, oh, I better not proceed here because I need to talk to a cashier about it. But they just come over and they say, oh, just stuff some paper in there. So, you know, I actually stuffed the voucher in there and it does seem to trigger it. I bought like, you know, a little over $15 worth of groceries, but it seemed all to work. It's one per transaction and I don't think it's one per account. So it's a way to save a lot of money on conventional groceries if you like going over to Stop and Shop, which I think you should because they are a very good seller of MasterCard gift cards. So that runs 5/3 through 5/23, runs for a couple of weeks. So,
wow, yeah.
You know, figure out what you're going to buy and stock up on paper towels, salsa, or a sandwich, whatever your preference is.
Paper towels here. I think you're salsa and sandwiches, right?
I need to diversify. I might look into paper towels.
Remember, it doubles as insulation. So I've got a grocery deal here. It's $15 off two $100 MasterCard gift cards at Safeway stores. And tagging along with that, there's an 8X fuel rewards on Happy Cards, also at Safeway. So if you're interested in stopping at Safeway, we go over this in more detail on the full show.
Well, the reason we like grocery spend so much is the way Amex so handsomely rewards spend at grocery stores. There is a related offer for adding authorized users to the Amex personal gold card, which is the king of grocery store bonus spend. I got this offer on my account. It's 5,000 membership rewards for adding an authorized user, and you could add up to 4 authorized users. With Amex, they need to be 13 plus years old, and they do want a social security number and a date of birth. So I added a couple. I did not get it on my wife's account, who on which I was already an authorized user. So if I had to guess, they're sending this out to people who don't already have any authorized users, but I'd be interested in data points whether that is actually the case. We'll include a link in the show notes to check whether you're eligible, basically the link that I got in my email. But I'd be interested in hearing, how about you, Sam? Did you get this offer on either of your accounts?
Yeah, actually, I did get it on my card, Robert, and I'm in the same boat as you. I have no authorized users. So we only have 2 data points, but seems to confirm it.
2 data points. We'll form a line out of that.
It's 100%. I like that form a line. Oh, that's man. Good. I think that closes out the news, and let's go ahead and get into part 2 of this trip report. Let's pick up right where we left off last week. If you have not listened to last week's episode of the free show, you really should go back at this point and listen to it, because we're picking up halfway through Robert's European vacation. And Robert, go ahead, and I guess we'll just take it from where we left off, right?
So we were talking about the train, and then we got to Rome. Yes. Off to Rome. So the next stop on our tour was Rome. So we went to stay at the Hotel di Maini, which is a real favorite of mine. I stayed here about, gosh, a long time, 15 years ago with my wife. And it is still fantastic. I think this hotel was the quintessential example of why you don't need hotel loyalty status. They upgraded me. They gave me a complimentary nice. Breakfast, free Wi-Fi, nightly turndown service. Who needs status with that kind of treatment? It was just an absolutely right? fantastic stay in a well-positioned hotel. I didn't even have to think for 1 second about whether I was getting what I was entitled. They gave me more than I bargained for, and it was just a fantastic, reasonably priced stay in a perfect location. That, to me, is the ultimate example of, I think the way you tell me and others to play the hotel game, not
absolutely
to stay wherever the Hilton is or whatever.
What part of Rome were you staying in? What part of Rome is that hotel in? Because for me, it's all about location.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I don't know where the perfect place to be in Rome is. It's kind of a large city to walk. But then again, as you're walking around, it's so interesting to me. Like, you never know what's going to pop up every street you go down. I mean, I've been there just two or three times, and it feels like New York City to me in that it feels infinite. Like I have only scratched the surface of all the amazing things in that city. So we walked east, we walked south, we walked southeast. It's just, I would say within 20 minutes of most major things, the train station and the Colosseum are a little bit further away. So we did take Ubers to get to them. But overall, just in a really nice location. And I can't recommend that hotel highly enough. I would rate it 97 out of 100 points using the 100-point scale.
Like a wine, yeah.
Exactly.
So you said you were upgraded. Tell me a little bit of how that went down. You had originally booked a room that fit everybody, or?
Yeah, we did. A family room that accommodated four. I think it did so with just a king-size bed and then a sofa that folded out. But when we got there, they said, we've upgraded you to a two-bedroom, two-bath suite. And so that meant a king bed in one room and then two twin beds in the other room, which was just ideal for us with the kids. One of my younger guy got sick on the trip. So having them share a bed is bad enough to begin with. But if they're one guy's sick and having a hard time sleeping, that really kind of disrupts everybody. So having two twin beds was clutch, especially in a separate room. It was just really fantastic.
What about tours, Robert? You going on any tours? Wait, no. The pasta making tour. How are we going to handle this? We're going to do a big reveal of how many shapes and sizes, or?
Well, so we did two tours in Rome, right? One was the history tour, and the other was the fun tour, the Colosseum tour. We did the full shebang there: Colosseum, Roman Forum, Palatine Hill. I was not a fan of that tour. I can't imagine doing that tour when it is anywhere near 80 degrees and humid, because it was perfect weather when we were there. We had great weather the whole trip, actually. I mean, going to Europe in April versus summer is just really working well for us, because it just gets so hot, especially in Italy, in summer. So it was great to do it in April. But it was just, I don't know. I just feel like there's got to be a better way to present some of the great wonders of the world than the way I'm experiencing it. Or maybe I'm just not that much of a history buff. But yeah, that Colosseum tour, they kind of handed us off between a lot of different guides. You know, we booked that as a singular thing. And then we must have interacted with at least five different guides as part of that thing. And that just made things a little choppy, and it ran longer than I wanted it to. It ended up being 4.5 hours.
That is long.
And, you know, right through lunch. And so we almost had to like break out and give ourselves some refreshments, because, you know, there's nothing to eat or drink inside these ancient ruins.
Ancient,
right. So that was, I would say, not a win, but you know, it's kind of one of those things you had to do, right. You know, the kids had just studied that in school, and you know, what are you gonna do? Not take them to the Colosseum. So I guess we had to do it, but we did that one first, and I'm glad we, you know, I'm sorry to anyone who's a big history fan, but we kind of got those out of the way for the pasta making class.
Hey, pasta's historic, right?
Well, have you done the Colosseum and Roman Forum tour, or did you do them separately?
No, we just did the Colosseum. Colosseum was the one thing that we really wanted to see when we were in Rome, and we were only in Rome 2 or 3 days, and we didn't want to overload.
Did you like it?
I shared this with you privately. We kind of had the same situation where we were getting handed off, and you know, we just said, let's just walk around and then just eavesdrop on some of these tours when we want to hear what's going on in these areas. We were there in the middle of summer. No shade at all in the Colosseum.
No,
brutal. It's just
they're showing
brutal.
You pictures of how back in ancient times there used to be a shade over the whole thing. And you're like, that would be a really good idea right now.
Put it back, right?
I really think there's got to be a better way to present some of these things to the public, because I have to think for the majority of people, it's not telling a compelling story. It's not delivering an enjoyable experience. I don't know. I don't think.
But is it really about the story, or is it about the pictures and the Instagram and the, you know?
I mean, get very good pictures. It's a darn hard thing to photograph. You know,
true, actually.
I haven't been to see the pyramids, but I have to think that's a very similar, you know, experience. That it just doesn't deliver what you maybe hope it would. Yeah, it's a great thing or something, but you know, just like, okay, you went and saw them, but what do you remember from that? And I don't know. From the Colosseum, unfortunately, it's not a It's not a high point of our trip.
All right, Robert. So now, come on, pasta tour. Tell me more about this.
This was the most anticipated between us talking back and forth. How many shapes would we make, right? And it's kind of silly to be, you know, talking about how many shapes you're going to make, right? Because this was, there's so many stories about this tour, but that we were saying was, is it going to be seven shapes? And I was, my kids were like practically betting on it and joking, right? Like, how many shapes are we going to make? Two, three, four, seven?
Because it said at least seven in the tour.
The thing is, I have read so many descriptions of this tour that I took that I can't even unearth that document that said that we were going to make seven shapes as if it matters, right? I mean,
no. In fact, seven shapes sounds like a lot of work, actually.
So we made two types of pasta and only one shape of each. We made fettuccine and called it orecchietti, but it's not what I see when I Google orecchietti. But it was really interesting that she called it orecchietti, and I assume she knows what she's talking about. But it was just so much fun. I mean, my everyone in the family loved it. The whole tour was absolutely fantastic. But I think the story on this one is the crazy way that some of these tours that you book through the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal get kind of shifted around and turned into something else and farmed out and repriced and reshared. And you don't know who you're going to take the tour from by the time you get to the end of it. But this one worked out totally for the better, because what we experienced was essentially an Airbnb experience. And I it was news to me that Airbnb was getting into the activities business, but it makes total sense for something like this, right? Like, I don't see an Airbnb tour of the Colosseum or the Eiffel Tower being a thing, but for, you know, establishing an authentic connection with somebody who has expertise in something and wants to show you about what it's like to be Roman or you know, to how they make sushi in Tokyo or how you make, you know, some aspect of French cuisine. I think that would be fascinating. So this was a perfect thing for an Airbnb experience. My wife, when she was shopping around for these, initially wanted to do an Airbnb experience that looked practically identical to what we did. And it was, I think, $107 per person. And this one I booked was only $55 through the Chase portal. So something like 14,000 ultimate rewards for all four of us. I mean, it was really cheap. It was like half as much as the one that we were initially eyeing. But we did not get the tour that we booked, and I'm glad we did. We booked through something called Once in Rome, and we ended up getting this Airbnb experience. I have no idea how it happened. It was confusing to connect with the host at the beginning because the time changed. I mean, like, you know, what time do you think a 10:30 tour would have commenced? Well, probably 10:30. Well, it's in the title
maybe,
of the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what time is the 3 o'clock parade, right? You know, it's like, it's usually 3 o'clock.
2:15.
But it's just so frustrating, right? I had the two phones and I'm clicking through this thing and that thing and I can't get it to come up on mobile. And how come the person isn't here? It was the classic stress pot that I typically associate with booking a tour. And, you know, so the description says, you know, meet in front of the French embassy. And I'm like, I'm in front of the French embassy. I don't know where I'm supposed to be. And I mean, I read a blog post about this. And on one of the screenshots, it tells you two different meeting points, you know, meet in front of this bakery and meet in front of the French embassy. I'm like, those are two different things. So a lot of confusion surrounding this one. And I think is a reason, you know, that I may have been hesitant in the past to book tours way ahead of time through a bank portal that's getting farmed out through Expedia to some tour company that might even be reselling it. I mean, it worked out great in this case, but it's kind of an example of some of the things I'm afraid of. I mean, I like the idea, actually. I mean, if somebody wants to take this tour, and I recommend that they do, I'll give you a deep link to the Airbnb experience that we took. And I think she wants $77 for it or something like that. And I'd heartily recommend people take that tour. But to go try to find the same tour that I signed up for initially, I can't even find it in the Chase portal anymore, let alone, you know, recommend somebody book it. So just kind of a weird, weird go of the tour experience there. But all in all, it was great. I mean, my son came home and the very next day he wanted to go buy some flour and eggs and make pasta. And he did it. And it was really, really good. So that's money well spent there. He made dinner the next night. That was fantastic.
Nice. Nice. So that was the last day in Rome, or do you have more?
That was about it. The only other thing we did was go to this other neighborhood. This it's called Trastevere. I never pronounce it right. I have to think about it and listen to somebody else say it. But it's a kind of a nice neighborhood with a lot of restaurants that I hadn't been to before. It's kind of south of the main center of action. But me and my son were looking on TripAdvisor. You know, you start paging through TripAdvisor, looking and seeing, like, oh, we like this restaurant, we didn't like that restaurant. And you look it up later after the fact sometimes and say, you know, how was this restaurant? Was it good? And it's usually, it seems like everything is 4 stars these days, right? Like, you know, well, some people liked it, some people didn't like it. It had more, you know, they were serving pizza, so on average, people liked it, but some people had a bad experience, so everything's 4 stars, right? And so we were paging through and like, let's go to the best restaurant in Italy, whatever that means, right? And we found the top 10 restaurants in out of 10,000, according to TripAdvisor.
Wow.
And we're looking at this list. And I'm like, I'm not going to bend my trip around going around these, right? But we're wandering around this neighborhood. And we see this sign for, it's called Mimi e Coco Trust, you know, for the Trust being an abbreviation for the neighborhood it was in. And my son goes, hey, Dad, that's the number two restaurant in all of Rome. We should go there. And so we do. And
so was
it was fantastic. I mean, yeah. It was really good. Like my wife is kind of suspicious of it because it was rated so highly. And I thought they might have been gaming the system as well. But we, you know, it was hopping. There was some people waiting around. We kind of, you know, stumbled up and looked at the menu a little bit. And, you know, the woman gives us a little taste of some wine, you know, is very friendly and says, hey, can we get in there? She says, ah, it'll be about 5 minutes. And we went in there and we had a great time. Fantastic meal. Really, really good. So, you know, it's weird, though. I was just thinking about, gosh, how do you select restaurants when you travel? There are so many things that people are looking for. There are so many different neighborhoods you might be in. It's so hard to dial it in. With all the information that we have, I don't feel like we're any better off. You know, you have personal recommendations from people, but they're not in the right neighborhood that you want to go to necessarily. Sometimes you just
they don't like what you like. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even ask, what if somebody, I mean, and we were asking like the chef who was running the pasta making class, you know, invariably, or you know, obviously you'd want to ask a chef what some of her favorite restaurants are in Rome. But just even try to answer that question for where you live, right? Oh, what's the best restaurant in LA? And you're like, that's for what?
Yeah, it's impossible.
So what are you looking for? Is it your anniversary? Do you want something quick with the kids? Are you looking for it to be kind of like classic Italian food or more contemporary? Or maybe you don't even want Italian food.
Yeah, but I think, also it's like travel. It's like saying, well, what's the best city in Europe to go to? Well, what do you like? It's totally an individual's taste. Even when you say to somebody, where would you go? Then you go there and you go, this food is not what I would eat at all, you know? But
well, I don't think I've gotten any better at it. We tried everything. We tried, you know, the old hotel recommendation. We tried stumbling onto a thing. And, you know, on average in Italy, you're going to get really good food. And we did. But, you know, you can do better and you can do worse even within that spectrum if you put a little effort into it or have a little discernment or whatever. But, yeah, we had some really good food. Just really interesting to see. How we can improve that aspect of the game, because so much of traveling is eating for me and I really enjoy it. And
same here. Yeah.
So let's see, wrapping up in Rome, one thing I liked about the hotel is they have a little sign on the desk that says €55 for a E-Class Mercedes ride back to the airport, all inclusive. I'm like, fantastic. And I remember that from 15 years ago when I was there, it being a major point of stress to figure out whether we should take the bus to the train. Should we take just a taxi? How do we do this? And even with advances in Uber and My Taxi and all these other apps, it's still ambiguous what the best way to get there is. There is no Uber X in Rome. It's not running there right now. So all the Ubers that we took around were Uber Blacks. So a bit more expensive to begin with. But this ride to the airport was once again just so easy and straightforward. We set the time. A guy shows up all old school. You know, he shows up there 20 minutes early. Car's in perfect condition. He's expecting us. Takes care of more of the whole experience than like I think a lot of, you know, shared ride drivers do. It was just fantastic. And I just can't say enough nice things about the hotel in terms of the way they just made the experience more comfortable for me. And that is what a hotel is supposed to do.
I agree. How many rooms was that hotel? If you had to say, you know, ballpark at 20, 40?
I would say at least, I think there's 4 or 5 floors and, you know, maybe I'd say 15 rooms per floor. So what's that, 60? It's not tiny.
60?
Yeah, it's not tiny, but it's not. It's definitely not as big as some others. Yeah, so so we're flying back now. And this is just, again, the stress and everything taking longer than you should of getting back, you know, with a connection, and why I love so much a direct flight that goes straight from wherever I wind up in Europe to our hometown of Boston. But so we took, this is a continuous ticket on Delta, and we booked the first leg on Alitalia in economy because business wasn't available. Not that I really wanted business, but by being in economy, they took our bags. We didn't check any bags for the whole trip, but they took our bags at the gate. So that already kind of dehorsed us a little bit in terms of swiftly moving, having any chance of swiftly moving through Heathrow. But it was annoying on the Delta app. They could do a lot better job of, you know, making the check-in and all these partner tickets work a lot better. So I went to go check in on the Delta app and it said, oh, sorry, you can't check in. So, oh, okay. So I went, I thought I was going to just have to check in at the airport, but I tried on desktop, had my laptop with me, and I was able to check in. And I was able to print out my boarding pass if I went to Alitalia's website, but it only printed out a boarding pass for the first leg of the flight. And so when I realized this, I said, oh, well, maybe I need to go to Virgin Atlantic's website and print out a boarding pass for that leg of the flight, because I don't want to have to be wandering around Heathrow trying to find a place to get a boarding pass for the Virgin Atlantic leg of the flight. So I go to Virgin Atlantic's site and it says, you need to go to Alitalia's site to print out the first, you know, to print out the whole thing. And I was just like, oh my goodness. So I'm without bags. I'm going to have to go get a boarding pass somewhere in Heathrow. But that wasn't even the main of my problems. That, you know, we got dumped out and had to completely clear the airport when we were coming in there, right? I mean, like probably at Heathrow. 45 minute wait to get through passport control. Then we had to completely exit, get our bags, take a train over to a different terminal. Once we got through all of that, though, it was smooth sailing and the full Virgin Atlantic experience. And I was really impressed with it, actually. So Virgin Atlantic has kind of a dedicated-ish portion of a terminal there. It has a dedicated check-in for Virgin Atlantic upper class, so that was a breeze. You have an elevator right next to the check-in that goes to a dedicated security checkpoint for upper class. And the flight was almost completely empty in upper class, so there's hardly anyone there. We go through security, and then they say that they want to get you through security and to the lounge in 10 minutes or less when you check in on Virgin Atlantic upper class in Heathrow. And that extends as well to Delta One. If you happen to be flying out of Heathrow on Delta One, that they share that quality of service. So we did all that. We went to the lounge. Lounge was absolutely fantastic. So the check-in experience there, the full thing, you know, if you're ever flying back out of London, is fantastic. But the problem, if you try to book a flight that just leaves Heathrow using points and miles, you're going to spend a lot in fuel surcharges. So I looked at, you know, the miserable leg that we had from Rome to London as really saving us a lot of money on fuel surcharges, because the taxes and fees of the from Rome are much less than they are from Heathrow, even on a round trip. So it was this kind of complicated open jaw that we took, Boston to Heathrow stop, and then Rome to Heathrow back to Boston. But that, the way I configured it, was much more affordable, all things considered, than if we would have had Heathrow as the departing point for the return flight. So All things considered, that worked out well from the moment that we hit the Virgin Atlantic upper class check-in. Things were nice. And that lounge there is fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. Did I talk about that before? I think I did.
No, I think you, I don't even know if you talked about the outbound lounge.
Outbound lounge is pretty shabby in the basement in Boston, but the Virgin Atlantic upper class, what do they call it? The clubhouse. Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Really one of the best lounges we've ever been to. We originally had a 4-hour layover schedule, which I thought was going to be way too long. But by the time we went through all the shenanigans I just talked about, we only had an hour and 20 minutes left. And we were pretty famished at that point, because we were getting to be like 5 p.m. and all we had was a little breakfast in the morning. And so, they've got a deli there. They've got a sit down restaurant. They've got, when you just sit down anywhere in the lounge and they'll bring drinks to you, you can sit at the bar. They've got a observation deck that you can go look at airplanes. They're supposed to have a kids playroom. And my son was all excited about that, because they said they had retro video games and a console to play. And they're like, no, we got rid of that. So they had this little kiddie playroom. The little kiddie playroom has, get this, like little like stuff for toddlers, like little elephants that they would sit on.
All right, you're talking my language. Yeah, tell me more.
It sounds great, but they have a PlayStation console. So my 11-year-old is all excited about that. He's going to play Fortnite. They don't have Fortnite, of course, because it's not like a, you know, like a disc that you play. It has to be downloaded on the machine. So he pulls out the discs, and they're like these old, like 18-plus or 16-plus or something like that, first-person shooters. So imagine being in this tiny room that's like glassed off, and you've got toddlers in there and some guy, you know, like killing people with blood on the screen.
That's some kind of like sociology experiment, right?
It's just, it's like, it's funny, right? You know, life goes fast when you have kids. there's like this sweet spot where you're like, oh my gosh, a kids club, like you could drop your kids off and it's great from like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 till 8, but then they start aging out of that 7, quickly.
Yeah.
And then you just look at the like Virgin Atlantic's idea of what should be in a kid's room. Like, let's just put some toys in there. And well, I don't know. They like, it's like games, right? Kids like to shoot each other. Let's put that in there. But it's, the lounge is very big and very nice and highly recommend. The food was fantastic. I took some pictures of it. I was particularly impressed with the range of food options, right? They did like a burger and a chicken slider combo, which is, you know, pretty straightforward. But then they had some just great Asian dishes and things like that. So I think that was the theme there, that they can really do a lot of things very well there. It wasn't just trying to be like British or just fancy, or it was just very, very good food that I felt like overall. So that was a fantastic experience. And I wouldn't bend a trip around doing that again, but I think the net of it is
you wouldn't say no to it. Yeah.
Just coming back on Virgin Atlantic was a much better experience than flying over for a number of reasons.
So then I guess everything went off without a hitch, you'd say, right?
Yeah. We didn't have any, everything was on time. You know, we had fantastic weather. I think we were really fortunate overall. Maybe close it up with some random observations here.
Sure.
So I've talked about my famous Google Pixel in the past, and you gave me a great tip on that. You want to share that one? Because that was your idea.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, I know before you had left, you were talking about you were going to add international data to your AT&T phone, right?
Yeah, I guess I was debating whether it was better off to use my Pixel device because the Google Fi doesn't charge any more over there, or whether I'd pay $10 a day to use my phone or what to do about the rest of the family's data. So that was my dilemma.
Yeah. I just suggested that, you know, turn the hotspot feature on your Pixel on, and then that could be the hub for all your data for your whole family at that point. How'd that work?
That worked great financially. So we went through about 7 or 8 gigabytes of data. And the way they price Google Fi, tethering isn't anymore. It's not anymore internationally, as far as I know. I mean, maybe I'll have a big bill waiting for me.
Sorry.
So I think it's going to cost us $60 plus the base of like $25 a month or whatever it is. So that's a big savings over, you know, $10 a day for everybody for the whole week. And, you know, we were able to have connectivity. But, there were some usability issues that came along with that. Like, if the Pixel had bad service, you wouldn't know that if you were connected to it via Wi-Fi, because your Wi-Fi signal, of course, is strong, right? So when something isn't working, it's not clear whether it's because of the connectivity issue or what's going on, right? And so I'm always turning it on and off, right? When we were at the hotel, I didn't want to be using that data. I wanted to be using the Wi-Fi. So that was a little confusing. And you cautioned me ahead of time, you know, every device is going to think that it's on Wi-Fi. So it's going to be gobbling data as if it's, you know, it's time to update apps and things like that. And we did, I think, get into some of that because we were walking around taking pictures. And since we were connected to Wi-Fi in Google Photos on our phones, it's set to sync all of those. So we're like, wow, we used 2 gigabytes today in the first day. That was pretty fast. What's going on? And so we started turning that off and on, but then we forgot and we left it on when we came back to the room to sync it and all that kind of stuff. So that was a little bit of a clunky point. And a lot of services over there, like say you're riding on a train and you want to use their Wi-Fi instead of just using the cellular function, it says, okay, yeah, you can use our Wi-Fi, but you need to sign up for an account. And to sign up for an account, we need to send you a text message. And to send you a text message, wow. I'm like, okay, so will I be able to get a text message on my iPhone with the number that's familiar to me, or should I send it to the Pixel? And, you know, so that was a little confusing. And when I was using, say it's time to call an Uber or something like that. Do I do that on my iPhone or do I do that from the Pixel? So I started just using the Pixel for more like Google Maps and calling of Ubers and things like that.
Sure.
Because the other devices would work, but the GPS triangulation seemed to be meaningfully wonky as a result of connecting to a hotspot as opposed to being connected for reals.
Sure.
So that, you know, it worked. I don't know what I'll do for the future because I'm gonna sell the Pixel here. But what we've done historically is just either use less data, maybe just have my phone be the one that has data, or if it's just maybe the two of us and it's a shorter trip, we just pony up for the $10. But I sure like the Google Fi service. I just am not a fan of the Pixel hardware. So I don't know, maybe a move to Google Fi in the future with iPhones would be a good fit for me in the future, or something that just had better international policies in general.
Anything else you want to close out with here, Robert?
Yeah, I was looking at space close in, you know, and I was thinking I wanted to see if we could fly on the direct Rome to Boston flight on the way home. And I did not see any availability opening up on that flight. I can't imagine it was sold out, but Alitalia seems to be a weird airline in terms of how they release space, especially to partners. I have not seen a lot of inventory come up for them. I guess the flight could have been full, but when I looked far out, close in, midway in, I did not see any space open up on that. But I did take a look with Juicy Miles that day, just to be convenient and look across a bunch of different options. And I saw 4 seats on Lufthansa if I wanted to fly business class from Rome to Frankfurt and then Frankfurt back to Boston. 4 seats in first class, 110,000 United each way. And that would have been a very nice way to come home. Probably overkill and excessive and a lot of miles.
Yeah.
And, you know, 110,000 per person versus, I guess I could have possibly booked it with Avianca, but that would have been complicated. But pretty expensive compared to 75,000 for the flight that we did take. But, you know, I'm always looking at things like this to say, well, what would it look like if I had the constitution for waiting for that couple weeks in or a couple days before?
Oh, and my goodness.
You're not on board for kind of telling the family, we're going to get home one way or another. It's April break. I mean, I was shocked that the flight was so empty. This was the end of April break. The flight was just like completely empty up front. And, you know, I don't know if they were releasing space on that flight or not. I was looking to see whether, like, say, if I looked for tonight for the flight coming back, is it wide open and could I use miles? It was weird. Like, Delta wasn't releasing space and Virgin Atlantic was telling me I couldn't use miles for that route and things like that. So yeah, that's still a little bit of a mystery to me. But I do always like the point is, I do like to take a look close in for routes that are meaningful to me to see what the patterns are, right? You know, like for, say we're going to Thailand, right? Can I maybe wait and just book it 2 weeks in, you know, have a good option in place with American miles that, yeah, sure, I might have to eat the award redeposit fee if I cancel that and go another route. But if that comes up, is that something I would entertain? Yeah, no, I think that would be, you know, 2 weeks if you have something in hand isn't too much stress, right?
Yeah, and hey, I mean, if you book it early enough and there's a schedule change, you could just sit back on that schedule change and then watch what happens and then leverage that into maybe a change or cancellation without a fee.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, so you're saying if a schedule change comes up, then that kind of puts me in the driver's seat. I have kind of a trump
card. Well, yeah, like for, let's say for your Japan flight or something, not that there's a better way to get home, but let's say on the way out, something opens up Boston to Tokyo direct or something like that, or just some other option opens up maybe on Star Alliance ANA or something like that, first class, you know, and you've had a schedule change, you can just call in and go, oh, I noticed a schedule change, can you cancel for me? And they'll just cancel you. But, you know, don't do that until the last week maybe and go, you know, it's not working for us anymore. And then
right. You're not compelled to confirm or you're not compelled to accept the terms of the schedule change up until the flight takes off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's so then you just go, it's like a get out of jail free card. That's do whatever you want. All right, Robert. So overall, good trip. Great trip.
What I would say fantastic trip. I give it 94 points. 94 points. It was really good. Everyone was in good spirits. We love Italy. We keep going back there. London was you know, better than we thought it would be, and we need to go back there more. And Venice was fantastic the way we did it. And Rome is always good, and Italy is always good. So, yeah, fantastic trip. Hopefully, some tips and tricks out of here are broadly applicable, if not for these cities and these situations, for other people as they plan their trips for this summer and next spring break.
I like it. All right, Robert, you want to close this out?
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/mileonomics. There you'll get a special link to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
And as always, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Milenomics, and Robert is at Robert Dwyer. We'd love to hear from you. And until then, we'll see you on the site.